Then God said, "Let us make man in our image, after our likeness, and let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, and over the birds of the heavens, and over the livestock, and over all the earth, and over every creeping thing that creeps on the earth." So God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him, male and female, he created them. Man created in the image of God. What does this mean for us? What does it mean for humans to be created in the very image of God? We hear the word image sometimes and wonder, image, it's usually sort of a vision, something, you see an image on a screen. Image, does this mean that we look like him? That we look like God? I mean, I know sometimes I may be a little biased, but I look at Genevieve and think she looks like a tiny goddess, but this really can't be the answer, right? After all, we're told in Scripture that God is spirit. It was only at the incarnation when Jesus Christ actually became man that he then had flesh and bones. So, no, the image of God really isn't about looking like him. Being created in the image of God means, really it means that as compared to all the rest of creation, we alone are like God in some unique ways. We're like him in several ways, among these being like our reason, our rationality, our minds. Sure, there are some animals and creatures that seem to have some ability to think at least a little bit, but nothing in compared to us. You don't see monkeys or dogs doing algebra. Being created in the image of God means we have reason and rationality. We're capable of thought unlike any other creature that has been made. We're like God, of course, in that we're creative beings. Just like God is a creator, we create. We create things not just for practical reasons either. We create things simply for the sake of beauty. We're like God and in his image in that he's given us dominion and rulership over this earth. But one of the clearest ways in which we are created in the image of God is that we are relational beings. Beings who are meant to be in relationships with others. Consider who God is. Yes, he's powerful, creative, all-knowing, but God is also a relational being in his very essence, that he exists as a trinity, three persons who are in a perfect unity and relationship. Think about how God's described in the Bible, described as a God of love, that God is love. There's no love without relationships. He has always existed in a loving relationship in the Trinity. He is love in his relationships to all mankind. When we consider what it means to love one another, don't we usually, rightly so, start with what does God do when he loves? And then we try to mirror that. We look at God because he's the perfect example of love. So when the Bible talks about mankind from the very beginning, at the start of humanity, male and female, when it tells us that we're created in God's image, it means that at our very core, we are relational beings meant to be in relationships, that we thrive as humans, first and foremost, when we are in relationships. We fulfill part of our purpose for why God made us by being in relationships, meaningful, deep relationships to others. First to God, and then to other people. Without meaningful relationships, then, we become less human, less fulfilled, less whole than we were meant to be. You know you're preaching well when your own daughter can't stand to listen to it. It's no surprise, then, that this book of Ecclesiastes that we've been looking at for the last month and a half or so, a book of wisdom, a book that talks about how to live well, has something to say about relationships and about the importance of having other people in your life. So turn in your Bibles to Ecclesiastes chapter 4. Ecclesiastes 4, verses 9 to 12. One of the best passages on friendship, on relationships in the Bible. Ecclesiastes 4, 9 to 12. Let me read it for us. Two are better than one, because they have a good reward for their toil. For if they fall, one will lift up his fellow, but woe to him who is alone when he falls and has not another to lift him up. Again, if two lie together, they keep warm, but how can one keep warm alone? And though a man might prevail against one who is alone, two will withstand him. A threefold cord is not quickly broken. A great passage on relationships, this passage actually, is often used in weddings. How many of you have been to a wedding where this passage is used? Admit, how many of you in your wedding had this passage used? Anyone? No? One. One person. The Harrisons. Yeah, there was a wedding here, actually, 2 months ago, middle of January, where a couple was married on this stage, and this passage was read, and the threefold cord part was read, and the idea was that the two of them were becoming one, but also that the two of them were two, and adding God in, that's threefold cord that wasn't broken. And can it be used of a marital relationship? Of course. But is this passage exclusively talking about a marital relationship? I don't think so. It's talking about all relationships. Of course, it works for a marriage relationship because it ought to be an extremely close relationship. But this really is simply about having relationships in life. So what does this passage tell us about the importance of relationships? It begins in verse 9 with a simple statement of fact. Two are better than one. Period. The end. Statement of fact. A true thing. Two are better than one. And then it actually gives four different reasons why two are better than one. Two are better than one first because of what they can accomplish together. Two are better than one because they have a good reward for their toil. Two are better than one because they can accomplish so much more when they work together. A good reward for their work. Just the fact that two can get done more than just one person can. And you think, well, of course, if you have two working instead of one, you have two times the manpower or woman power, right? And therefore move twice as fast or accomplish twice as much. But I don't know. I think I tend to disagree that two people get twice as much work done as one person. I find often that two people get three or four or five times as much work done as one person. Of course, when the two are actually devoted to doing the work and they don't just distract each other. I mean, in my own life, I often find it true that when I'm working alongside someone else and we're both dedicated to the work, we do a lot more than two times the work. Through mutual encouragement, we work harder or longer than we normally would. Having two brains instead of one, we work smarter or even smarter than we would have and accomplish more. So we're often able to accomplish far more than each of us could do separately, even in double the amount of time. Two are better than one. First, simply because they have a good reward for their toil, they're able to accomplish far more together. Reason number two, why two are better than one. Four, in verse 10, for if they fall, one will lift up his fellow. But woe to him who is alone when he falls and has not another to lift him up. Two are better than one because they can pick each other up when they fall. For if they fall, one will lift up his fellow, and maybe really rightly it ought to say, for when they fall. Let's be honest, everybody's going to fall in life. No matter how strong, how smart, how sharp you are, everyone's going to fall in life. When they fall, they'll actually have someone to pick them up, but woe to him. But God help the one, but danger, beware, caution to the one who is all alone, for when he falls, he has no one to lift him up. Because sometimes when you fall, you need help getting back up. Right? Yeah, in that Batman movie, you may say, and why do we fall, Master Wayne? So that we can learn to get back up. But the truth is, sometimes we can't learn to get back up on our own. Sometimes you have to have somebody else there. Take a lesson from turtles, right? Ever seen a turtle get flipped on its back on a shell? Just can't possibly flip over, uses its neck, tries to push itself over, but it's stuck. It requires some help getting turned back over. Sometimes when you fall, you can't get up on your own. Consider those commercials today for things like Life Alert and other tools meant to help the elderly or disabled, that when they fall, right, and in every commercial, they always fall and they call. help, I've fallen and I can't get up. Because sometimes when you fall, you got to have help. But let's take a minute and pause here, because if you think for 1 minute that it's only the elderly or the weak who need help getting up after a fall, then you need to reconsider. We all need help sometimes when we've fallen down in life. The problem, though, is that we live in a society that praises individualism and independence, that elevates self-reliance to a virtue. How many of the men in this room, when we were young, were told by parents, teachers, and coaches that we had to be tough, rugged, winners, pioneer types, survivors, always come out on top, told things like, tough it out, grit your teeth and bear it, take it like a man, never accept help from someone else, it shows weakness, don't let anyone know that you've fallen. Of course, now we live in a society that is increasingly saying the same types of things to women. Be a strong, independent woman. Don't show weakness or emotions. Don't fall prey to the old stereotypes of women always being ruled by their emotions. You have to show that you are even stronger than the men around you, even tougher than the men around you. Prove your toughness and grit and tenacity in the workplace, in your friend groups. And so what do we create? We create an entire society of people who never want to admit that they've ever fallen, who are unwilling to ask for help when they've hit the ground. A society that no longer values intimacy because it requires openness, but instead praises independence and strength and appearing as if you have it all together. The fact is, we are all human, all weak, all prone to falling, and woe to the one that has no one to help them up when they've fallen. Two are better than one because they can accomplish more together. Two are better than one because they can help each other up when they fall. Third reason Ecclesiastes gives comes next. Again, if two lie together, they keep warm, but how can one keep warm alone? Tells us that two are better than one because there's mutual support in a vulnerable situation. So you hear this passage and you think, man, I mean, it sure does sound like marriage, right? The marital bed. Wives, right? Always cold. Get into bed. Put your freezing cold limbs on your, you know, furnace of a husband, right? The husband squirms. You think, it sounds like bed and marital bed, and so it must be talking about marriage, but really it's just talking about a vulnerable situation. I mean, you got to realize we're going back 3,000 years when this was being written. No heater. You don't simply turn on the heater and suddenly you're warmed up. When you're cold and maybe you don't have access to wood to build a fire, how are two going to keep warm? Whether it's soldiers on a battlefield or people on a journey or whatever it may be, two need to keep each other warm. If there's one alone, what warmth does he get? And the situation here is one of vulnerability. I mean, when you're cold, what defense do you have from the cold? Well, today we have some, but let's imagine you're out hiking and it's cold outside. What can you do to make it not cold? Nothing. These are elements that are outside of your power. They're outside of your control. It's not something that you can suddenly handle and fix on your own. What you need is someone else simply to help alleviate the vulnerable situation. It's vulnerability when you're alone and you're vulnerable, then what can you do about it? But if you have a friend can help you get through a vulnerable situation. You need somebody to warm you back up. Think back to times when you were vulnerable, like the first day of a new job when all the eyes are on you. Good to have a friend the first day at a new school, surrounded by strangers. You feel exposed, unable to handle it. When you're sitting in a courtroom and you're about to take the witness stand. When you're waiting in a hospital room, knowing there's nothing you can do to change the situation. The dentist's office, or standing in the unemployment line, feeling vulnerable, unguarded. You need a friend. You need somebody to keep you warm when it's cold. Two are better than one because there's mutual support in a vulnerable situation. And then fourth and finally, Though a man might prevail against one who is alone, two will withstand him. Two are better than one because there is mutual protection when you're attacked. Though a man might prevail against one, two will withstand him. Whether our attacker is human or is spiritual, we know that we're under assault constantly. We need others to stand alongside us, other people to be in our corner, to have our backs, to be there with us when we're feeling attacked, assaulted, and overwhelmed, because two are better than one. You can accomplish more together. There's support when you're weak, when you're vulnerable. When you fall, there's somebody to pick you up. When you're attacked, there's somebody to have your back. Two are better than one. And then the author ends it with, and if you think two are better than one, you get to the end and say, a threefold cord is not quickly broken. It ends with this further expansion. Look, two are definitely better than one. You add a threefold cord in there and it gets better and better and better. And of course, when you think about how is a cord or a strand or a rope broken, it's broken when it's under stress, right? When it's being pulled, when there's something coming at it, cutting it, whatever. It's harder to cut a threefold cord than a twofold one. A threefold cord is not quickly broken. When under stress and difficulty and tribulation, the more cords you have, the more support, the harder you will be to break. I spent some time doing some climbing and some rappelling out in the mountains. Well, my wife and I will be at Lost Valley Ranch in Colorado in a month. And then all the 9th and 10th graders from Camp Paravel will come out there and they'll do some rappelling, where their life is literally all dependent on a rope holding them up. And if I looked at that rope and I saw that it was one strand, I'm not going over the edge. You know, you look at it and you say, I want something that's interwoven, that has a lot of strands and cords woven together and strong enough to hold up. So the question then is, how many cords are in your strand? What sort of relationships do you have in your life to hold you up? Because we're created in God's image. We are relational beings. We need friendships. We need others. We accomplish more together. We need others to pick us up when we fall, to support us when we're vulnerable, to protect us when we're attacked. We are not meant to be alone. And yet, so many of us feel alone. We live in this country that values independence and individualism. We live in an age of loneliness. It's been called a modern-day epidemic. Poll from just 3 years ago in 2016 surveyed 2,000 Americans and found that over 70% of them said that they experience loneliness. If there's 75 people or so in this room right now, surveys say that more than 50 of us are experiencing loneliness. And many of us, deep in our hearts and souls, find ourselves crying out of loneliness. Things like, why don't people love me and help me out of my problems? I'm crying out, if only others realized how difficult things are for me. People are crying out, nobody really cares. I'm all alone in this. And of course, there are, frankly, answers to these cries. Why don't people love me and help me out of problems? Well, friendships must be cultivated. They don't automatically just suddenly occur when things go wrong, when calamity strikes. We cry out, if only others realized how difficult things are for me. Well, you know, self-pity ruins relationships. Nobody really cares. I'm all alone in this. Well, anybody who doesn't know the pain we're in can't be criticized for not responding. But these are the cries of the lonely. Now, the solution is to do the hard work of building relationships constantly. We're made in God's image, built to be in relationships, and yet feeling alone. So what about us? What do we need to do about it? Maybe we should actually simply stop at what do we need? And the answer, of course, is that we need meaningful relationships. We need meaningful relationships in our lives to live well. In order to thrive as humans, We need relationships so we can accomplish more, so we have people to pick us up when we've fallen. We need relationships so people can support us when we're vulnerable. We need relationships so we have backup and protection when we're attacked emotionally and spiritually. And we need relationships so we can do all of that for other people around us. Maybe you even have some good relationships in your life. 70% of the people around you are lonely. Maybe you need to stop thinking about how you need some friends or don't need some friends and think about how the people around you are lonely and need a friend in you. So you can look at somebody and saying, you've got a friend in me. You got a friend in me. But every one of us needs to commit to being more open and connected, to making relationships a greater priority in our lives. Time to drop the tough guy, independent girl act and start opening up more personally. Because this is the message of the gospel anyway. I mean, culture says act as if everything is fine. And Christianity says all have sinned. We know it's not fine with you. We know that in your heart and in your soul you're broken, but being mended back together by God. Why hide it? Why pretend as if everything's fine? Message of the gospel is, you know everything's not fine with me, so why shouldn't I open up and share with you that I've fallen and I need help getting back up? But it takes time. It takes actual human interaction in between people and not in between screens and people. Or you can be in the most connected generation ever, and maybe 10 years ago, people really thought that these devices were going to make us the most connected we had ever been in human history. And people thought that putting things out there like Twitter and Facebook would help us be the most connected generation ever. And of course, what we have is the most surface-oriented generation ever. So will you, in your own personal life, make a commitment to making your relationships real and deep? Because that's what it takes personally. But we're also going to try to make a change corporately as a body of believers. And many of you know this because you're part of the leadership team, whether deacons, ministry leaders, or elders, but some of you don't. We're going to make a change as a church to help prioritize relationships. In January and February of this year, last 2 months, the three leadership teams, elders, deacons, and ministry leaders, gathered to share our vision and goals for the year 2019. But we didn't get very far. Because as we gathered, we started sharing sort of what was on our hearts, our thoughts about where GBC currently stands, and we came to a conclusion that there is at least a degree of disconnectedness at Grace. That though we're a small church, we could still be doing a better job of prioritizing relationships, of encouraging one another, of challenging one another, and being open and vulnerable with each other, of picking each other up when they fall. Now, this seems to be an aspect of the culture here at Grace that needs to improve. And as our discussions unfolded, a solution that kept rising to the surface was to put a real emphasis on small groups. So GBC is now going to start having a focus on small groups. I say we're not going to start small groups because technically we have a couple small groups already meeting. But we're going to put a new and renewed focus on small groups. And so I know you probably have a lot of questions. And I'm going to attempt to answer as many of them as I can right here and now. I expect I'll even answer some questions that you don't even have yet. But I want to share with you the mission and vision that the leadership of Grace has for these small groups. So here we go. Question number one. You ask, what is the purpose of small groups? Why are we doing small groups? We're a small congregation. Aren't we basically already a small group? The response. Well, the purpose of small groups truly is simply deeper relationships. We're made to be in relationships. This is who we are in the image of God. And we believe that having small groups will help people dive deeper in relationships. Look, we realize it's a small church already. So why do we need small groups? To be frank, because we're just busy people. I mean, we are busy people with busy lives. And one of the greatest benefits of having a regular weekly or monthly, right, or every other week, whatever it is, small group gathering is that it is a time specifically set aside to build up relationships. It's true, we're small. We know each other, but it can be hard, even with how small we are, to find time in our busy schedules to make sure we prioritize relationships. So by getting in a small group, you're taking that step and making an extra commitment to relationships. Question number two, well, what types of small groups are we going to have? What types of small groups are we talking about? Because if you've been around church circles and small groups for a while, you know there's a whole lot of different ways we could do it. Many different kinds of small groups. Been in churches where small groups means Bible study, just a bunch of small Bible studies. Sometimes small groups are built around activities, right? You have a running small group or a quilting small group or a gun shooting small group, whatever it is, right? So what are our small groups going to be? If I was to use one word to describe all of our small groups, the word is simply flexible. They're going to be flexible. When looking at a style or at a type of small groups you want to do for your church, you want to find out what will fit your church culture. And frankly, we are a flexible church. Just sort of who we are. We're a flexible congregation. So as we start a small group ministry, anyway, we're opening it up to all sorts. All right, you want to have a small group of couples who are going to focus on marriage and child rearing? Go for it. You want a small group of women who meet on Wednesday nights for Bible study? Go for it. You want to have a small group of men who meet for breakfast, for prayer and accountability? Do it. Small group that meets up to quilt. You want to shoot some guns? Or you want to learn some skill together, to work out together? Go for it. We're open to different types. Will these small groups always be growing or will they stay one size? Again, depends on the group. We're flexible. When will these groups meet? Flexible. Right? If it's a group of working moms who want to start a group built around having a ladies' night out, they'll probably have to meet at night or on weekends. Right? Well, look, we don't care when you meet, we just care that you meet. With all this flexibility, then what do we even mean by small groups? We just mean a group that is going to meet regularly for the purpose of building relationships, for the sake of encouragement and love and accountability, so that when you fall, you got a group who knows you, who can pick you up. So that when you're feeling vulnerable, right, you got a group to support you. So that when you're going to work towards a goal, you have people to work alongside you. This is what we want. We want people around you to know what's happening in your life, who can share in your joys as well as in your burdens. Flexible. Question number three. More questions. How will these groups begin? Well, they'll begin because I have a questionnaire sitting on that chair right there that I'm going to have you fill out. And it's a very simple, very short questionnaire. We're going to have everybody fill it out where you'll be able to indicate if you're interested in being a part of a small group or not. If now's a good time or if you want to do it, but later. All right, we're also going to be looking for people interested in starting or leading a group. But once we have some people willing to lead or co-lead or team lead a group, then it'll launch. Question number four, if I join a group, am I committing to be a part of it, like, forever? Is this a life sentence? No, of course not. One of the great things that I think small groups can do is, first time you meet, you set a date. You say, hey, we are committing right now to meet every week for 3 months. And at the end of 3 months, we'll reevaluate. And maybe some people will leave and some people won't. And that way you don't feel like, oh man, our group disbanded after 3 months, we failed. No, you hit your goal. Your goal is to make sure that you met with a purpose for X amount of time. And afterwards, you know, you get to the end of 3 months and say, hey, this is awesome. Let's keep doing it. You get to the end of 3 months and you say, maybe not. Maybe your group by necessity can only meet at certain times of year. You know, if you're going to have a group that goes running outside together, you're not doing that from the months of November to, well, this year, from November to March, for goodness sake. That was terrible winter. And maybe you have something where you say, hey, we're going to be a summer group. It's going to be easier. We can meet during the days or whatever your schedule is. So, no, it's not a life sentence, I promise. Question number five. There are a couple small groups at Grace already. What will happen to them? So there are. Only good things will happen to them. Right? They'll continue to meet. If they want to change, if they want to open their group to new people, then they can. If they want to keep going what they're doing, then just keep on chugging. We're simply going to ask them to sort of designate a point person that we can be in contact with so we can actually help support you. Because question number six, what will the overall leadership of small groups look like? How's this whole thing going to work sort of leadership-wise? But the elders don't simply want to start these groups and then just leave them out there on their own to see what happens. We're going to support these small groups by connecting with them and supporting the small group leader. So even if you decide to co-lead or team lead a group, we want you to designate somebody that we can talk to and be in contact with. What's that support going to look like? Look, it can be difficult or overwhelming to find material for a small group. Right? Some people, that's just not their jam. They say, I'd like to lead a group, but I don't want to do the work of trying to find and weed through the billion studies that are out there that we could do. So we'll help you. We'll come up with a recommended list. Hey, here are some things that you could do. So we'll give you some recommendations there. If you need a place to meet, you can meet here. This building is always open to any group who wants to meet here. We know that childcare is a burden. The elders are looking at trying to help provide for those families, right, with whose chief barrier to joining a small group is the financial burden of providing childcare. But I can tell you now that there is already a small group of ladies that is formed that is going to start meeting at this church 9 a.m. or something on Wednesday mornings, and they're going to do childcare. They've said, hey, we want to be able to dive deep, to talk deeply. And while kids can sometimes be very cute interruptions, they're also very constant interruptions. Hard to have a deep conversation when every 3 minutes you got a kid coming in and bugging you. And so they've already lined up and set up to have childcare that the group is going to pay for together. So, if you're a mom and you say, man, I'd like to, but childcare, hey, there's already a group who's working on that. So whatever it is, even if your group is team-led, we want you to designate a person because the elders want to encourage and support you however we can. In order for that to happen directly and effectively, we all know Mike Siebert has long had a heart and passion for small groups, and he's volunteered to be the elder sort of point person over small groups. And it's simply going to be a support and organizational role. Someone comes to the church, and when they say, hey, I want to do a small group, Mike will know what small groups are meeting and what they're doing, and he'll be able to say, hey, I can put you in contact with this person. Mike will be the one, talking to small group leaders and saying, hey, do you need anything? Can we do anything for you? Here are some recommendations that we have. So that is, he will be the sort of elder over small groups point person there. Question number 7. Will this I told you I had a lot of questions. I was answering things you hadn't even thought of. We've been thinking about this one for a while. Question number 7, will this change any existing ministries? For the most part, no, it will not. But there are a few slight changes where things that have belonged in the scope of other ministries now fit better as a small group. For example, Eddie and Jennifer both agreed that the men's and women's Wednesday night Bible studies really fit better as a small group, men's and women's small groups. And so they really don't actually fit under the men's and women's ministries then. So when this current session ends in May, that will be the end of those Bible studies until a man or a woman says, hey, I'd like to start a women's Bible study small group. And then it will just happen as a small group. It just seems to make sense for that to be the case. It fits better that way. And the nice thing about that is then it's going to open up the door to, okay, we now have a bunch of women committed to do a small group Bible study. Do they want to continue meeting on Wednesday night, or do they want to change the night? Do they want to change the date constantly? Right now it's not a set thing, but it's a small group, and you have a little bit more control and flexibility and a way to build those up in a greater way. I'm going to end at 7 questions because, it's the number 7. You got to. I know that was a lot of questions. It was just a lot of material I just threw at you, but let's return to the big picture. What's our expectation of small groups? What's our hope for small groups? What's our vision? Simply that people at Grace will take a look at their own lives and see the need for deep relationships. That this is who we are. It's who we're created to be. In the image of God, we're relational beings. We need to be connected. If we're going to thrive as human beings, we need other people. That in joining a small group, even if it's just for a short period of time, you're prioritizing forming these deep relationships in your lives. And that's our goal for small groups at Grace. We're open to whatever this may look like for you. Now we get that for some people, they're just not in a time of life right now that's going to make joining a small group possible. That's going to make it difficult. And we get that. While it would be great if it happened, we don't actually expect every single member of Grace to be involved in a small group. And we're not changing our structure and who we are as a church to be we are now a church of small groups, and that's all we do, and we're going to, you know, pound it down your throat. But we really do believe that relationships are important. Now, this is a great way for you to get connected. So if you've been feeling disconnected, if you've been feeling lonely, as so many are, this is a great opportunity for you to get involved in something. So we do pray you'll consider it. Whether it's a Bible study or a girls' night out or a prayer and accountability group or a dinner party you host every other week or a weekly summer barbecue and lawn games thing, we want to see relationships growing for our sake and for the sake of the kingdom of God. So I'm going to go ahead and hand out these questionnaires, or I'm going to have Bill and Mike help me hand out these questionnaires. Four very simple questions. I probably made way too many of these, because that's what I do. Four very simple questions. Number one, I'm interested in being a part of a small group. Yes, no, yes, but not right now. I would consider leading a group. Consider, right? We just want to get in touch with you and contact. Just because you put yes here doesn't lock you in to leading a small group. We just want to know if you're open to the idea. Yes, no, yes, but not right now. Third, I'm interested in joining a small group. Four, and you can circle one or more. And if you're interested in a group for couples or just for men or women or a co-ed mixed group. And then fourth, if there's some barrier that's obviously going to stop you from joining a small group, encourage you to put that down. And then, of course, you can put your name. I didn't require you to put all your contact info because for 90% of you, we have all of your contact info. If we don't have your contact info yet, feel free to go ahead and give it to us there. That would be great. We promise not to send you too many emails, a rational amount of emails. So yeah, if you'd fill those out, and then when you're leaving, if you want to put them on that back chair closest to the door, just make a stack of those there. Worship team, I know you're filling out your questionnaires right now, but if you'd go ahead and come on up, and we'll let everybody sit for now until we actually get to the singing part. Don't worry, there's no way you can fail this quiz, you know. Not this one. Other quizzes I give, yes.